Now, third factor, the hostility of the Brahmins. Now, who were these Brahmins? Some of you may not know. The Brahmins were the hereditary priesthood of Orthodox Hinduism. And of course, the Brahmins and Brahmanism were in existence in India long before the time of the Buddha. And the Brahmins traditionally claimed a monopoly of religious knowledge. They specialized, as it were, in religion. That was their profession. And they claimed also the exclusive right to teach, whether religious subjects or even secular subjects, what we would call arts and sciences. You couldn't be a religious teacher unless you were a Brahmin. The Brahmins were very strong on this. This is one of the things for which they criticized the Buddha, that being a Kshatriya, a warrior, he dares to teach religion, which they thought was all wrong. And the Brahmins had very, very strong notions indeed about their own superiority to the rest of mankind. We find them claiming, for instance, that they, the Brahmins, were born at the very beginning of things, at the dawn of creation, out of the head of Brahma. Brahma being the personal god, if you like. Whereas the Kshatriyas, they say, the fighters, were born from his shoulders, the Vaishyas or traders from his thighs, and the Shudras, the workers, that is the vast majority, from his feet. And we find that throughout the history of India, the Brahmins have always been a very proud, a very exclusive, a very haughty, and a very powerful body of men indeed. They've always claimed social precedence and a deciding voice in all political affairs. In ancient India also, the Brahmins considered themselves above the law. A Brahmin could not really be punished. And certainly a Brahmin could not be put to death by anybody, regardless of the crime he committed. This law, incidentally, was in force in Nepal until quite recent times. During my own visit there some years ago, it was still in force. Now, it's not surprising that these Brahmins, the hereditary priesthood of Orthodox Hinduism, were rather hostile to the Buddha, because the Buddha didn't like the caste system, didn't agree with the caste system, didn't agree that some were superior by birth and others inferior by birth. The Buddha taught very clearly, very unmistakably, that a man's worth depended not on his birth, but on his deeds, on his actions, on his character, on his spiritual attainments. So the Brahmins were not very happy, on the whole, with the Buddha or with his teaching. And sometimes they used to come to him, wherever he was sitting, under a tree or in a cave, they'd come to him with tricky questions. The Pali scriptures represent the Brahmins as sort of plotting among themselves and talking it over. And one says, well, I shall go to him and I'll put such and such question. And there are only two possible answers through this question. If he answers in this way, we'll catch him up like that. If he answers in the other way, we'll catch him out like that. In this way, he won't be able to escape. So in this way, they plotted and planned, and they came in front of the Buddha, very often with mock humility, as if to learn something, and they put these questions. But of course, the Buddha, being the Buddha, invariably answered the questions, and the Brahmins were invariably discomforted. It rather reminds one of the scribes and Pharisees coming to Christ with their questions, and expecting to catch him out. Now, the fact that the Buddha, like Christ, wasn't caught out ever didn't make him any more popular with the Brahmins. But for the time being, there was nothing that they could do about it. There was the Buddha. Even they had to recognize his great superiority intellectually and spiritually. They could do nothing about it during his own lifetime or for a long time afterwards. But they bided their time. It's characteristic of all hereditary priesthoods that they've got a very long memory. Like the elephant, they never forget. And the Brahmins of India, they certainly never forgot, and they certainly never forgave Buddhism. We must remember, by the way, that the Brahmins were householders. They weren't monks. They lived at home with their wives and with their families. They officiated at various social and religious ceremonies for other lay people. such as name giving, giving the first rites, writing the letters of the alphabet. You find in Orthodox Hinduism there are scores and scores of ceremonies. Your whole life is marked out by ceremonies. As soon as you're born, there has to be a sort of ceremony of purification. Then there's a ceremony for giving you a name. And then when the child is given rice for the first time, there's another ceremony. And of course, every time there's a ceremony, you have to call in the Brahmin priest because he's got the monopoly. He's the only one who can perform the ceremony, the only one who has the right to pronounce the sacred words which make the ceremony a success. And of course, you have to pay him for that. That's his dakshina or his fee. So this is what we find. So in this way, the Brahmins were in close touch with the lay community from birth until death and after death. Even after death, you weren't free from the Brahmin priest. You had to call him in or go to him to perform your after-death ceremonies. And even though in India people do this and they believe that unless the Brahmin has performed the Pindadan and the Shraddh ceremonies, the soul, the spirit of your father, grandfather or whatnot will not go, cannot go to heaven. And many Hindus very firmly believe this. And these ceremonies are still kept up very much to the benefit of the Brahmins. If you go to Benares, even now you can see this. You've seen them in the slides. The Brahmins sitting under these magnificent umbrellas and people coming to them on the steps of the ghats and paying them to perform these after-death ceremonies. So in this way we find that the Brahmins, staying at home, living in the villages, with their own families, performing ceremonies for the lay people, were in very close touch with the lay community all the time. But as we saw a little while ago, Buddhism was becoming more and more monastic, more and more centralized in the large monasteries, away from the lay community. So in this way, we may say, a very dangerous situation developed. The Brahmins gradually became dominant in the social and religious life of the community at large, whereas the monks remained confined to large monasteries supported by the remaining Buddhist kings or kings sympathetic to Buddhism. This was how things developed.